You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Momootsi, and alongside me as always, the legendary Coach Brendan Sir. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing absolutely terrific on this rainy, rainy day here in the States. So,
oh, a bit of rain over you? I don't know how you're dealing with that, Coach. I don't know what that's like.
I'm ready to move to it. Oh, I was going to move to London, but probably not a good idea if the rain bothers me. But anyway, yeah, no, doing good, brother. Doing
the Dubai good. Government, if you're listening, please save us. I'm doing great, Coach. Should I tell you why I'm doing so great? Season 3 of NBA 2K26 is here, and there's festive rewards for everyone. Get your festive fit on with seasonal cosmetics or relive some summer ball with the return of the Sunset Beach Park. Now, real OG 2K players know about Sunset Beach. If you know, you know. Now, it's not just love for your My Player, as there's plenty of My Team rewards to dive into, including a pink diamond Cade Cunningham, who's been lighting the NBA on fire. He's the face of this season. He's the cover athlete for season 3. And the first week of the season is always the perfect time to jump back in with the stack. So what are you guys at home waiting for? If you're not on NBA 2K26, I don't know what you're doing. With that, Coach.
The only thing I can think about is they're listening to our podcast to figure out what they should do in their game. But anyway, I digress.
Here's what you should do in NBA 2K26. It's very simple. Just pray you don't come up against me online. That's all.
Wow. I only want to go up against the great Mo if I'm coaching a real team. And if I had my bad boys, Mo, I'd knock you on your ass the first time you went in for a layup. But that's,
you know. Hey, but guess what, Coach? I'm gonna get back up every single
get
time.
You would get up. You're a
I'm gonna get back up every single time. I think I was born in the wrong era, because you know. I'm pretty old school, as you guys are listening to this.
You're born in the Stan Van Gundy era.
That's right. And I want to talk about a little segue. Coach, look at your professional podcaster. Segue into our first topic, because, you know, Stan Van Gundy, my colleague now that I work with Amazon Prime, my colleague over in the States, the great Stan Van Gundy, who, by the way, is one of my favorite commentators. I love Jeff Van Gundy, and now I love Stan Van Gundy calling the games. Right. I think both of those brothers are fantastic. Stan, of course, another great NBA coach who you know very well. But he had some controversial statements this week that I wanted to talk to you about, Coach, because, you know, I agree with a lot of Stan and Jeff. I agree with a lot of their takes. But there's two this week that I just can't get on board with. You ready for me to hit you with them?
Absolutely.
The first one is that he says Nikola Jokic might be the best player in the history of the NBA. So let's start there. What do you think about that, Coach?
Well, you know what? Stan and Jeff are truth tellers. And I've coached against both of them. I love both of them. I love their dad, Bill, who's about 90 years young and a terrific coach. They say things that are so provocative. Jeff, when he was with ESPN ABC, would say things, rule changes and stuff, that he really stimulated your thinking, but he really wanted to do it, I think, to get under the NBA's skin a little bit, the league office. But Stan is totally different from Jeff, even though they're brothers. And Stan, I think, came about this well thought out. Stan, like a lot of us, we don't live in yesterday. I've coached in yesterday, I've coached in today, but I don't live in yesterday. I appreciate the players of today. And what he's saying is he's really coached in today and he has great appreciation. And he's commentated in this era and he really thinks the world of these guys. I have no problem with that. Jokic might be, you know, I mean, you do, you know, in the States, they do this BS where they call it Mount Rushmore, you know, which is some stupid site, you know, freaking rocks of the best people in a certain field. We call it Mount Rushmore's. I'll tell you what, Jokic would be up there on mine. He's certainly in the best international players of all time, by far. You know, the only one that's not playing now would be my man Drazen Petrovic, maybe Tony Kukoc, maybe, who I love both of them.
And Arvydas Sabonis, if we got to see him earlier in his
absolutely.
Career, come to the NBA. Sabonis, but he came over to the NBA pretty late.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sabas was absolutely incredible. you know, and my man Šarūnas Marčiulaitis. So there were so many great players when they first came in the league. But I'm telling you, Stan's not all wrong with this. This guy's skill set is among the best because he has the skill set of guards. He's got the brain of a point guard. He's got the toughness of, you know, the toughest guys you ever saw play in the league. But he can do everything in a court. And he competes. He wins. There's nothing you can't like about him. But when you see the people like Kareem and the different and the Dr. J's of the world, and you say, Michael Jordan's, you say, you know, how can he be better? But I appreciate what Stan's saying. He might be the best, one of the best all-around players of all time. I don't have a problem with that. I coached against Michael, so Michael's on. He starts there. Then we can fill in below. For me. That's just me.
I mean, Nikola Jokic is a great player. And yeah. I would never disrespect Nikola. I think Absolutely. He's fantastic. One of the best talents we've ever seen. However, when we're talking about being an all-time great, let me ask you this, Coach. Mm-hmm. Who's the best team that Nikola Jokic has eliminated in the playoffs?
Boy, that's a great one. That's a great one.
Because if we're talking about all-time great, winning's got to count for something. So he's only got the one championship.
Weren't they an A seed, the Miami Heat?
Yep. I don't think they've beaten a 50-win team in the playoffs.
Yeah. How about that? You know, when we had Isaiah on last month, and the thing about Isaiah, Larry Bird is on my list of greatest ever. Magic's on that list. Michael's on that list. Isaiah beat all of them in their prime. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so, I mean, and I'm not trying to say Isaiah's the best, but when you talk about the very, very best of the best, he's one of them. That's a great point. But Isaiah, you have to go through people, you know. Magic and Kareem and Worthy, those guys always had to go through Bird, Parrish, and McHale, you know. And I think that's – and Michael had to go through the Pistons and the Lakers, you know.
Yeah, well, they did beat the Clippers last year, who had just won 50 games exactly. But then you get to a game 7 against OKC, and Alex Caruso is guarding you for the entire game, and you don't dominate and win that game.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Jokic isn't an all-time great player. He absolutely is. And I'm not saying that you have to win every game and every series that you're in. But I've got to see, to call him the greatest player of all time, I've got to see more than one championship. And yeah. I've got to see him go up against, like, look at the competition Kobe Bryant faced in the Western Conference throughout his career.
Incredible.
He was playing 50-plus wins in damn near every round. Whereas Jokic and the Nuggets, they've not had that test. And when they have had that test, they've not been successful in that.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, Mo, and this is why I try to never say, you know, this guy. I mean, Jokic is, you heard how I appreciate his skill set and who he is, his cerebralness. But my God, I never got to coach against Wilt Chamberlain. I saw him alive in person. My God, I can't imagine having to guard this guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is strong. Shaquille O'Neal, he might break Jokic in half. I mean, Shaq, when he was so strong, and that's not an insult. I mean, Shaq could break anyone in half. Kareem was so tall. You know, think about Wimby, but with this incredible, unstoppable skyhook. mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and could pass and do it. It's just amazing.
Hakeem Olajuwon as well, my favorite center of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the dream shake and everything like that. I mean, and could block shots and everything. I just think there's so much, and we haven't even talked about the great Bill Russell.
Yep.
All he did was win rings.
This is why I hate comparing eras, right?
I don't believe in it.
We've never seen Jokic have to guard another great all-time big. Who's the best center in the NBA except for Jokic? Embiid? And they play twice a year and Embiid misses the matchups. So we don't really see Jokic get tested at his position. He's dominating a league where the big man aren't really the force that they once were.
That's
now, I'm not saying that Jokic couldn't do it. I'm just saying it's impossible to compare. And this is why I hate saying the greatest player of all time and the greatest ever, so on and so forth, because it's a different game today. Look at the space he has to operate on the court. When they're playing five out, he's got all the space in the world to operate on the block. In previous eras, Shaq's dominating and the paint is all cramped up. Kareem's dominating and got three players sitting in the paint waiting for him. So that's the first thing with Jokic. And I think Jokic is an amazing, amazing player. But to call him the best player in the history of the NBA, I think is a little bit of a recency bias because we've seen him dominate for the last few years. But when we look back at the history of the NBA, it's very subjective as to what your opinion is on the style of play and the type of basketball that's being played.
And Stan also, tell me, Mo, he said in the 20, he feels the 20 best players have come in this last 20 years.
This is the next thing I want to talk about. He says we can probably say the best 20 basketball players in history have probably played in the last 20 years. So from 2005 onwards, he believes that the 20 best players of all time have played in the last 20 years. I can't get on board with this take whatsoever with any stretch of the imagination.
No, I was doing it. You know, if you had said it, I would say, Mo, you're just doing it so that Hoop Genius has more clicks than anyone in the podcast history of basketball. So I get it. And you're provoking. Stan is bright. And you know what? I have to we're going to get him on as a guest. We'll get him on as a guest and talk to him. And I think the thing about it is I just have such appreciation for the people that have played in this league and how great they've been and how we keep getting better. I love that. Giannis is like, I coached against Dr. J. You cannot believe the things that man could do. And then I see Giannis, he's spectacular. I just love these different guys. I mean, to have to devise a game plan to stop Karl Malone, my God. And to Tim Duncan. I mean, how about Tim Duncan? And I'm coaching Doug Christie with the Toronto Raptors. And like the first week I'm with the team, our team with Damon Stoudemire and Marcus Camby and Doug Christie and Walt Williams, we go in to play in San Antonio in the Hemisphere Arena, Alamo Dome, 60,000 people are there to play us. Mm. And they got David Robinson and Tim Duncan.
Yeah, good luck.
Luck. You know, I mean, like that's the game plan to defend and stuff like that. I just think it's, I don't want to compare that, stuff like that.
I hate this comparing stuff, right? Because the other thing that annoys me is everyone says this is the most talented era of basketball we've ever seen. Okay. Here's a few things that people need to be aware of. The rules of the NBA, not the rules of basketball, the rules of the NBA have changed to favor the offense. The defense is so limited in what they can do now to disrupt the offensive player, okay? Removal of hand checking and all these other different rules, they're tailored to increase scoring. Why? The NBA is a business. The more scoring means the more highlights, means the more fans that you can reach. The lack of physicality in today's game, I'm not saying we should go back to the days where players would punch each other in the face, but a little bit of physicality is not even allowed anymore. And then you talk about, with the most talented era of the NBA ever, everyone score. If you actually look at NBA offense today, all right, which play faster than ever before, NBA teams have an offensive rating of 126 points in transition. So per 100 possessions, they score 126 points in transition. But in the half court, it's only 97 points. So are they really the most skilled, or are they just the fastest, get out and run to the three-point line and score a three, which is worth more than a two, which they didn't previously shoot in transition in previous eras? So when you get to comparing people and you're saying, if you bring this player from the 70s or 80s or 90s and bring them into the modern NBA, okay. But that would mean you would have to have them be born in the 2000s like these kids are, have access to elite coaching from a young age like these kids have access to all the best facilities, science, technology, medicine that all of these guys are, have access to all of the best travel and all of the best conditions to make everything easier for you as an NBA player. You're comparing these guys who would fly commercial, guys in Bill Russell's era, in the segregation era, couldn't even stay in the same hotel as their teammates for games on the road. All of these different things that they've had to go through, and you're going to tell me that we're in the most talented era. No, it's not the most talented. This is the same as anything. It's evolution, right? Things develop over time, the way the game's broken down. And now we've got to this era that they tell me is the most talented era of all time, and we've got the most efficient offense, and they're playing the quickest, and the guys can't stay healthy. So is this really the optimal way to play basketball if your star players can't stay on the court? Have you really optimized it, or is it just optimized for the spreadsheets that are telling you this is the most efficient way to play basketball?
With all those things that you mentioned, Mo, I think the thing that's really telling is during the golden era of the NBA, which was late 80s, 90s, in my opinion, there's no disputing that. I think you saw the very best players in the league. They were playing 78 to 82 games a year, regular season. And that, without all that science, without travel, et cetera, that shows you a lot. The love and passion for the game is another factor. And I just think that, you know, I'm not going to get into the, you know, but when we won our first championship in 89, I think as a team for the entire year, we took 273 point shots. That's a week in some teams in the NBA taking that many shots.
When I saw the stat that Draymond Green has made more career threes than Larry Bird, I said, put it all in the bin now. Because there's no way on earth anyone's going to tell me Draymond Green's a better shooter than Larry Bird.
You know, so I mean, it's a whole different thing. I appreciate these guys, but the rules are significantly different defensively. Mm-hmm. The offensive rules are different, and the coaching's much different. The coaching in the golden era was really superior.
I'm not trying to say that the players today are better or worse than anyone else. I'm just saying for you guys who are listening to this and you see all of these takes and stuff online and on shows, it's lacking context and it's lacking nuance. That's the problem with a lot of these things. And that's the point that I want to make. I'm not a hater on the current generation by any means. I love these guys. And in fact, let's talk about some of the young players in the league, because Cooper Flagg, the number one pick in this year's draft, one of the youngest players in the NBA, set two records this week. First, he became the youngest player in NBA history to record more than 10 assists in a game. And then last night, he surpassed LeBron James as the youngest player to score 35 points in a win over Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers. LeBron achieved the mark at 18 years and 348 days old, whilst Cooper Flagg did it at just 18 years and 343 days. And by the way, I want to start off by saying, shout out to Cooper Flagg, because he actually went up a year in high school to compete against kids older than him, meaning when he had his one and done come out of college, he should still be in his first year of college now.
He should be in his freshman year.
A lot of guys do it the other way around. They sit out a year and play against guys younger than them so they can dominate the competition. So first of all, salute to Cooper Flagg, because this kid is a special talent.
Yeah, he's, I hate to say this, but the kid's done everything right. Mm-hmm. And I hope it just continues. And they even, you know, coach Jason Kidd, because of injuries and stuff, had to play him out of position. Jay Kidd, people were criticizing him because he was playing him a point guard. Not the least bit. Someone as incredible as a point guard as Jason Kidd, I would never criticize. I think what he was doing was teaching him in a very fast way how the NBA is going to function. And I think he did that. A 6'8", 6'9" point guard. Absolutely brilliant. But the kid is just a winner. He's won everywhere he's been. And he's not a, you know, I predicted he would be our rookie of the year, but not because he's an elite scorer. He's an elite player. Mm-hmm. He guards his position. He plays the game totally the right way. That's the best thing. And his teams, he really is about winning. His team's not winning now, but it's not because of him. It's because of all the other injuries that they have on their squad.
Now, the Dallas Mavericks are in a tough spot, right? Because they made the Luka Doncic trade for God knows what reason, but they have a team with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving, who, of course, talking about the injuries, Kyrie's not playing at the moment, AD's in and out of the lineup, and Klay Thompson, who's an older version of Klay Thompson, right? They're a team built to compete now. And the fact that they got the number one pick in Cooper Flagg is just a bonus. They didn't even anticipate this when they made that trade for Anthony Davis. Do you think if you're the Dallas Mavericks, you keep trying to make this work and you say, well, Kyrie's going to get healthy and next season we'll have a good run at it. AD will be healthy. Cooper Flagg will be in his second year and we can actually make a real run. Or do you look to move Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, some of the older guys and go all in around Cooper Flagg, because paying those big salaries is not sustainable for a significant period of time?
I think the biggest thing is when you talk about trading players, Mo, the biggest thing is the value. It's value. Everything in this world is about value. So what is the value of the player you're trying to trade, and what can you get in return for him? The value of Klay Thompson is way, way, way down. He had a game of a year last night. He had 17 points in the fourth quarter. Great. That's great. Klay came there to play with Luka, to be honest with you. You know, and it would have been a nice thing. He would have had all kinds of open shots. Kyrie will help him in that regards. Right now, AD doesn't have value. I think he played his first game of the whole season the other night. you know, and here we are, basically game 20 or 22, and he's playing his first game. AD, with his salary and his age and his injuries, has really very low value. Because the reason is his salary is so high, but more importantly, the availability of the team to acquire him. If you go to your owner as a front office person, I want you to understand the front office job. If you go as a GM or president of a team to your owner and tell him you want to basically invest $60 million a year to acquire this player, and he gets hurt on your watch after being hurt for much of his later career, you're not going to be the GM or the president of the team much longer. So there's a tremendous risk involved. And I don't think you're going to see people stepping up and doing that.
Well, Nico Harrison did exactly that. His owner agreed to it.
Where is he now? He's unemployed.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, that's the risk. That's not a Nico blast. I'm just saying that's what happens. You know, you tell your owner, this is a good move for us. We're going to be better in the long run. And it's a disaster from get go.
Yep. It is absolutely wild.
And Kyrie, I'm not trading because Kyrie played beautifully. He's going to be back, I think, within the month. And if he is, he's just, as my friend Stephen A. Smith says, Kyrie Irving is box office. You want to pay to see him play because he's a magician with the ball. He's the closest thing to an Isaiah Thomas as far as ball handling, you know, and talent and skill at a super high level. And he's been doing it forever, you know. So I'm a big Kyrie fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to see him get back on the court. One of the most electric players in the entire NBA. Speaking of electric players, Tyler Herro has made his return from injury for the Miami Heat. Long anticipated return for Mr. Herro. And the Miami Heat were clicking very well without him. And now he's back and he's had some interesting things to say, because the Miami Heat have become notorious for this offense they're running this season, which is a lack of pick and rolls, which has been very successful them, leading the NBA in pace, putting up fantastic scoring numbers, leading the NBA in points per game. But Tyler Herro said, I think as the season goes on, we're going to have to mix in more pick and rolls. I think even if pick and rolls were in the offense, we know our spots well enough to get to what we want with that spacing. Right now, I have 2 points. Everyone knows I can score. I just want to win. So do you think Tyler Herro is unhappy with the current style of play in Miami?
No, I think he was just expressing his opinion. You know, he had gotten hurt, I believe, in the playoffs last year, possibly again in the first round against Cleveland, possibly, if I'm not mistaken. And so he has not been healthy to practice or anything, and finally getting in after nearly 20 games into the year with the team playing way over what the people thought. Eric Spoelstra flipped the script, and as he said, when you lose your last game by 55 points, you have to do some soul searching, and what we were doing was not working. So he embraced a new style of play, which is very hard, and I compliment Spo for doing that, to change your style of play as an 18-year head coach.
Yeah, the Heat usually are one of the slowest teams in the NBA, and they're the fastest.
And that's Pat Riley's style. After Pat left Showtime, the Pistons, we indoctrinated him into the Eastern Conference style of play, and he went to a very physical style, very hard playing, get it inside. I mean, and he's always had players like Alonzo Mourning and them that really could go inside. Shaq, he brought Shaq into Miami where they won a championship. So I think a philosophy has always been a physical style of play. So I think now for Spo to do this, I think he's really seeing the results. And the players on their team have really excelled in it. So they're not going to change the style. Spontaneous pick and rolls will happen, sure. But it's not going to be a part of their offense.
Yeah, Tyler Herro, he used just two of them in his first game back for the Miami Heat. considering last year he used over 35 picks per 100 possessions, is a massive change for him. But he's had enough time on the sidelines to watch the team and see the film of, you know, how they're playing. What's interesting to me about the Miami Heat, and the question for me is sustainability, because they're not the most efficient team in transition. It's just the sheer volume of transition opportunities they get that makes up for it. They have, and what's great is everyone talks about their offense, but it's really their defense being so good that allows them to get out there and run. Their average in the half court from basically everywhere on the court, aside from the three-point line, where they've been shooting the ball really well. But we know that three-point shooting is one of those things that can go up and it can go down. It's not sustainable. And their opponents have been shooting 31.6% from behind the arc, the lowest in the league. I think that's even lower than what OKC held their opponents to last season. So unless you think Miami's defense is better than OKC's defense last year, you can expect that number to go up. So what happens when opponents start shooting better from three? What happens when the Heat cool down from behind the arc? And the free throw rates and stuff like that all kind of average out as the season goes along. So what happens to the Miami Heat when the game slows down? You know, they do a great job of not turning the ball over because they run so many isolations. They don't pass the ball too much because they're not doing a lot of that screen actions, right? The Heat use more isolations than any team in the NBA since the James Harden Rockets.
So you're very analytically oriented this morning, my friend. Okay, so which is good. It's a good balance for us on this show. You're the smart one, and I'm the dumbass coach. Okay, and so I use the eye test for me. They're not a great fast breaking team. The Noah LaRoche system, which they've embraced, is one of dribbling, one and beating people off the dribble by not bringing another defender in pick and roll to help. And so the purpose is that if we play fast, in other words, we get the ball up to court, you know. Fast break to me is when we have a 2-on-1, 3-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3 advantage. Miami is not, they'll take that, and that comes when you get stops defensively. But what they're really trying to do, Mo, is they're trying to get you before you set up your half-court defense. They're going to drive on you because the belief in the NBA is when players are playing fast, they don't rest defensively.
Yep.
Good offensive players in the old days would rest on defense because the game was more half-court oriented. But now, if you just come down and you just try to take your opponent off the dribble, all of a sudden, there's no weak side help, and that's where they're really hurting people. And I think that, as Tyler Hero really gets to understand what they're doing, he's really going to embrace it because he's one of those guys that can beat his man off the dribble. He doesn't need help. And I think, and he's also going to get a lot of wide open spot up shots. The other thing is, a player like Hero is such a good shooter that there's a term we use when you're guarding someone like him, you stay at home with him. You don't help. You stay at home with him. Well, what that opens up is for the other guys in the team to drive by their man and getting no help from Hero's man. That is a beautiful thing as a player. So I think it's a complete. And the only way the players can really understand it is not watching video or on the blackboard or in a coaching meeting or session. It's when they're out there doing it. And he's really going to excel when that happens, I think.
So you think the Heat is sustainable?
Sustainable, as in all NBA teams, sustainable until asterisk injuries occur.
Yep, because Norman Powell is doing a huge job for them in terms of scoring the ball, particularly behind the arc.
And when Bam misses some games with an injury or something like that, that's when things aren't sustainable. The player that is, there are two players that have really, I think, gone up. Jaquez, I think, has just been incredible.
But sixth man of the year, maybe.
But man, I'll tell you what, the Ware kid, the center.
Yep.
Absolutely, and I think he was a 15th pick in the draft. Absolutely incredible at the way he's playing. He is so long. He is so big. He's perfect for the lobs to drive. His man helps. Lobs are offensive rebound dunks. Unbelievable. And I remember you were saying, oh, will AD go to Miami? I don't want this kid. I love this. I want this kid. He's on a rookie contract, and he plays his ass off.
on both sides of the floor. And he's even started shooting that three ball. And I really like Davion Mitchell, who we've talked about before. Not just defensively, but on offense, he does a great job of pushing that pace and making those initial drives to collapse the defense as well.
No, that's the guys that you need. Those guys that maybe aren't, he's not a three-point shooter or jump shooter. He is a pusher, and he's maybe the top three on-ball defenders in the NBA, which is the key, is the point guard position must be able to control the basketball, and that's what they have.
Well, we'll see if this offense and defense is enough for the Miami Heat to win the NBA Cup, as the knockout rounds have now been decided. Coach, should we start over in the Eastern Conference and start breaking this down?
I'm telling you, I'm so damn excited by this. I mean, I'm probably an NBA person. I probably embraced this from the get-go with Adam Silver, and each year it keeps getting better.
Well, let's look at the matchups, because in the first quarterfinal of the Eastern Conference NBA Cup, you have the Orlando Magic, who are 4-0 in the NBA Cup, who clinched on Friday with a win over the Pistons, right down to the wire, that win was. And then they're going up against the aforementioned Miami Heat, who clinched on Friday with a Pistons loss and a Cavs loss because they finished with the best record of non-group winners. They've come in as wild card. It's going to be a one-off game, I believe, in Orlando. Who do you think is taking that?
Well, I'm gonna cop out by saying, I wonder if Paolo Banchero is going to get back on the court. Mm. Okay, they've been doing it without him. I always like home court advantage, even though it's not as big a factor in the NBA as it is in other different leagues around the world. But you know, I think you gotta in past Emirates Cup play, I think you've seen teams win on the road because it's a one game series, and so if Miami went in and won, would not at all surprise me. I'm picking the Magic, but Miami at would not surprise me at all.
Okay, I'm picking Miami for this one. But let's talk about the other quarterfinal in the East. The Toronto Raptors and the New York Knicks. The Raptors 4-0 in the cup as well. They clinched on November the 21st with a win over the Wizards and a Pacers loss, facing the Knicks, who are 3-1 in the cup, who clinched their spot with a win over the Milwaukee Bucks at Madison Square Garden on Friday.
I think that is so incredible, right? That we see the Raptors emerge basically to be, are they the top seed in the whole thing or in the East?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But it depends on their record versus the Magic. But
I think that's so great, though. I think it's a huge thing for them. And I like them to win. Toronto's a great home court advantage. The Knicks are an okay road team. I really like the Raptors to win and advance.
I mean, okay is generous. They're 9-1 at home and 3-5 on the road. So I don't have the Knicks winning this one.
Yeah, we picked the same.
Yeah. So over in the West, the OKC Thunder, who got to the final last season, ultimately losing to the Milwaukee Bucks, they're facing the Phoenix Suns. The Suns are the wild card, 3-1 in the cup. They clinched on Friday with a tiebreaker over Memphis. Meanwhile, OKC 4-0 in the NBA Cup and seemingly undefeatable in the NBA this season at all.
You know, they played last Friday, as you mentioned, and it basically is a 2-point game. And Phoenix is just really doing great. Shout out to the fighting Jordan Knotts, as I call them. Okay, they're really doing a great job. I like their squad a lot, but I'm not picking against OKC. I was bad enough I had to do it on a preseason show with you. Okay. Mark Daigneault's wife won't talk to me anymore. I mean, it's unbelievable. So.
The Thunder are the one seed in the West. They have the point differential over the Lakers, and the Magic are the number one seed in the East with the point differential over the Raptors. That's why the point differential makes such a difference in group play. I'm picking the OKC Thunder, although that was a great game against the Suns when they last played just the other day. But I'm picking the Thunder to go through this one. The other quarterfinal is the Los Angeles Lakers, 4-0 in the NBA Cup. Darvin Ham must have left some good vibes over there before he left. They clinched with a November 25th win over the Clippers, where they'll be facing the 3-1 Spurs, who clinched on Friday with a win over the Nuggets. The Spurs, who seem to be doing okay, staying afloat without Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah, but they ain't going to stay floating for long against now LeBron back there. I like the Lakers. I like them big at home. So I like the Lakers OKC to win, to come out of, you know, to come out there.
And then who wins that semifinal then, coach?
In Las Vegas. I think OKC understood. They went there, and I believe it last year against Milwaukee, they lost by 30 in the finals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, they got killed.
So I'm saying, great. Here's just a saying we adopted back in the day. Great teams never forget.
Mm-hmm.
OKC's coming out.
Yeah, I watched the Starting Five show on Netflix. Shea was there talking about their loss in the final where he had a bad game and so on and so forth, and how that fueled them to win the NBA championship. I've got no doubt that they want to go out there and win it. Who do you have coming out of the East? You picked Orlando and Toronto. I picked Miami and Toronto. Who have you got coming out, though, to the final?
I'm sticking with my... I worked in Toronto. I worked in New York.
Coach, you worked in Orlando.
I didn't work in Miami, so I'm pissed at Riles. Anyway, I'm picking my Toronto Raptors.
Okay.
I'm picking Toronto. And I'll tell you what, I think now Toronto, OKC, two young freaking teams in Las Vegas.
I would love it. I think the Heat would beat the Raptors in that semifinal. Maybe I'm just too much of a fan of what the Heat are doing right now. But I think either way, OKC wins the tournament ultimately.
And I'm going to, and just so we have good sparring, I'm picking Toronto upset
to OKC. Win the whole thing. Wow.
And you know what? And Adam Silver, he'd be shining star. He'd be saying, this is exactly what we wanted, in that we gave hope to franchises that didn't have any beforehand. We got the NBA excited. We're not even at Christmas. But OKC, if they win, you know, people are also excited, saying this team would be up to about 26-1 at that time, probably.
Yep. You know, all-time season.
Which would be insane. Absolutely insane. And now with Jalen Williams back, it's not impossible. So OKC's favored, but I'm going to go with...
Okay, I like it. There's one more team I wanted to talk about. I mentioned briefly when I was talking about the Magic and their close win over the Pistons. The Detroit Pistons, who won, was it 13 games in a row on their recent 13. Winning streak?
Tied our record back in
the day. They just lost a few games now. I think it's two games. They've lost two games back to back. One versus the Celtics, crumbled in clutch time. One versus the Magic, crumbled in clutch time. And then last night against the Miami Heat, they were up 15 with 3 minutes to go, and they almost lost that too. They ended up winning by just 3 points.
And they were up 20 early in the fourth in that game.
Yep. I wanted to get your take, coach. Not even your take, but your insight and your knowledge for a young team like the Pistons, who are now rising up the ranks of the Eastern Conference, looking, you know, Cade did an interview saying he doesn't want MVP. He wants to win a championship. He wants to get to the finals this season and win a championship.
He's right.
How do a young team like that conquer their late game demons and find a way to execute down the stretch? Because that seemed to be their Achilles heel so far, because everything else has been fantastic.
Yeah. Jalen Duren, he was out for that game, I think, last night. I think, if I'm not mistaken. But I worry about, here's the only thing I worry about with them. They've gone through some injuries and showed that they're still a good squad. But I'm worried about Cade, and that he is taking on so much of a load. And in crunch time, he has to take so many shots. Why? Because he can get his own shot anytime he wants. But just like I worried about it with Shea, when he's actually playing more minutes than Shea.
Yeah, because Shea gets to rest the fourth quarter because they're up by so many.
But when you play as many minutes and you're involved in taking shots to win games for your team, it takes a toll. So and he's going through a year of missing almost a complete year with injury. Mm-hmm. So I worry about that, of him getting worn out. But yeah. I love him. I love what they stand for. I love what J.B. Bickerstaff has done and his staff. And I love the camaraderie that they have on their team. They seem to have replaced Beasley with a couple of shooters on their squad.
Mm-hmm.
I really
like
it.
And they've got Ivy back. They've got pieces there if they want to make a trade, but they don't have to make a trade. So they're in a pretty good spot.
So I was a huge Ivy fan coming out of Purdue. And he didn't have the point guard skill set, but he was, to me, the closest thing I saw to Russell Westbrook athletically coming out of college. Russell wasn't a point guard either coming out of UCLA. He'd only played ball for a few years. And all of a sudden, he kind of just developed when he went to OKC and into this incredible player. But that wasn't, Russ wasn't even considered a first round pick halfway through his sophomore year at college. People didn't think he should have stayed in school. He puts his name in a draft. He ends up going fourth or whatever. Mm-hmm. Incredible pick by Sam Presti. But I think Jaden Ivey is a baby Westbrook.
Yep.
Physically. All of a sudden, if you looked at his body, he's been out now for almost a year and a half injury. And all of a sudden, I saw him the other day. My God, his body is so fulfilled. He comes from a great basketball family. His mom's the coach of Notre Dame. She's incredible, former WNBA player. So he's got a great mom, kids, and he's played for an incredible college coach. I just like him. If he's able to come back, it's going to take a lot off of Cade Cunningham. I love what they're about, but I worry about the load that Cade has to go through.
Yeah, I need Jaden Ivey to give me that tricep workout because the way that this guy's put on muscle was crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm he's going to work with me.
Oh, I hear that.
Yeah.
Coach,
I took you for a loop on that one, brother. No, he's a special kid.
You're gonna wrap up the show. I just got a message. I'm getting a parking ticket outside my building, so I'm gonna go and make sure I scare the parking board away. So we're gonna have to wrap up the show real quick.
Mention my name. The fellas over there love me.
I'm sure the parking board is good. But we're gonna be back on Thursday with another guest episode. Coach, are we gonna give them a hint as to who our guest is gonna be on Thursday?
Well, you know what? My friends over in England, since we're doing a show over there, they're not used to our currency. You have pounds, we have dollars, etc. But we just eliminated this one currency from us in the last month. We don't make them anymore.
That's a good one.
A coin.
That's a good one, Coach. That's a good one.
I'm on my game this morning, baby.
Hey, you're on point. You're on point. All right, Coach. I see you. All right. I appreciate you guys for listening. Coach, appreciate you as always. Make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. And until next time, also, please do subscribe because now I have to pay for this parking ticket. And it's about 70 quid. But just be, it's a Sunday. Who the hell gives out a parking ticket on a Sunday? I promise you. When I see this parking warden, I'm going to have some strong words for him. But anyway, please do subscribe and help me pay off my parking ticket. Until next time, get buckets.